If any of you had an earworm lately, now I'm not talking about a parasite in your ear canal. I'm talking about a tune that hijacks your brain and won't let go and keeps playing over and over and over, and no matter what you do, the loop continues. On most Sundays, as soon as I pull out of the parking lot, a chorus of a song we sang is going over and over and over in my head, and it's why we go straight to Culver's, because eating is the only thing for me that stops the tune. Now this morning I want to give you an example of an earworm song. Now I know it may not be your cup of tea, and the song is not my cup of tea either, but I must confess that there is something about this song that is contagious, and I warn you that after hearing this, you may have this song, you may have this song going on in your head for the rest of the morning.
For $1 zillion, the question is, who let the dogs out?
Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out?
Who let the dogs out?
Was nice, the party was bumping. And everybody having a ball. Until the fellas started him calling. And the girls respond to the call. I heard a poor white shout out.
Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out?
Can somebody tell me the name of this song? Okay. Y'all, earworm songs share several things in common. The words are simple and they are repetitive, and the lyric is memorable and the rhythm is compelling. When you get all of those things working together, that creates a wormhole. Now, there's something closely related to this, and that is the theme songs of popular television shows that we have known over the years. I think the older ones are the better ones because they have stuck in our minds for years now. Now, I want to conduct a little experiment. I'm going to give you a line, or I'm going to ta-da something, and I want you to tell me the show, and don't chirp in before I'm done with each one, okay? Da 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 da, the chores, da 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 da, the stores, da 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 da, fresh air, da 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 da, Times Square. A horse is a horse, of course, of course. I told you to wait till I'm done. And no one could talk to a horse, of course. Now, who can turn the world on with a smile? Mary Tyler Moore. Boy, the way Glenn Miller played
songs that made the hit parade.
What? Some of you got that wrong. All in the family. Rolling, rolling, rolling. Right, okay. Come and listen to my story about a man named Jeff. Beverly Hillbillies. They're creepy and they're kooky, mysterious and spooky. Mm-hmm. Then Okay. I'm thinking. I'm thinking in here. It's burning in here. I'm creating one here. Da 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 da. Da da da. Da. I said, let me finish. Da da da. Mm-hmm. Here's a story about a man named. Okay. Okay. The one I really want, I lost the tune in my head. It has not been a wormhole. Da 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 da. You're gonna kick yourself. Da da
da da da da.
Yes. I love Lucy.
I was waiting for you to be done.
Okay. I love Lucy. See, the principle is the same. Now, people who study... Okay, I'm continuing with the sermon now. People who study brains for a living call this phenomenon processing fluency. It appears that our brains are programmed to and enthused by hearing simple things. Simple things that can be grasped. They are enthused and become embedded in our head because they are simple and they are repetitive and they are enjoyable. Now, the same principle also applies to changing behaviors. Ever try to become different in some area and you're trying this behavior out, you're trying to be a better person, and it seems so foreign, and you do it over and over and over again until finally the light comes on, and you've got it. It takes root. Now, the Apostle Paul didn't know anything about processing influency, but he practiced it. Our lesson from 2 Corinthians, I may not 2 Corinthians, begins with three little words, from now on. Now, what do you think of when you hear from now on? There might be a coming attraction here. From now on might mean that what was is not what will be. From now on could mean that something has changed everything. From now on, Paul says, we no longer look at one another from a human point of view, though at one time we looked at Christ from a human point of view, but now we see each other not from a human perspective, but as spiritual beings. From now on, he says, the way we relate to God and one another has eternal weight. From a human perspective, we can't really see one another. From a human perspective, we can't see beneath each other's mask that we wear all the time. But when Christ is our companion, when we are together in our solidarity to follow Jesus Christ, we look at one another and we see new creations. The old stuff doesn't matter. We see that our deepest needs are the same, no matter where you go. Today there are so many divisions. Everybody belongs to an opposing camp of conservative and progressive and white and black and haves and have-nots. We believe that the people in the other camp are the enemy. People who don't think like, look like, behave like, vote like, and see the world like us can't be like us. And if you're not against what we're against, then get the hay out of here. And what is, to me, sad beyond sad is the way these cultural conflicts have walked right through the front door of the church and we haven't even put up a fight. You can fill in the blanks as you will. We would be a stronger church if it weren't for so-and-so. I don't have any reason to speak to so-and-so across the aisle, and I have overheard that in this church. All that so-and-so is interested in is power. Look who's calling himself a Christian. The church would be a much happier place if so-and-so would find the church, find another church. Now, these are not old problems or new problems. They go back to the Corinthian church. The very same issues were present there. And that's why Paul gave the Corinthians an earworm. Did you pick that up in the scripture today? All this is from God who reconciled us to himself. We have all been given the ministry of reconciliation. In Christ, God was reconciling the world to himself, entrusting the message of reconciliation to us. We entreat you on behalf of Christ, be reconciled to God. Two or three short verses, five times do we hear the word reconcile. He says it over and over and over. Because he's saying that in God's determination to woo us, God built a bridge so that we could walk back to God, back over that bridge that we, by our sin and our self-centeredness, wrecked. The bridge is Jesus Christ. Ephesians says it this way, even as we hear the talk all around us of the need to build more walls, listen to Ephesians. Jesus has broken down the dividing walls of hostility that separate us, Jew and Gentile, male and female, slave and free, rich and poor. I can define Christianity in one word. Any idea what it is? Relationship. The most important thing in life is relationship with our God, with our families, with our friends, with the poor, with the suffering, with the environment. Relationship is what we are lost souls without. When relationships are broken, we are broken. In the introduction to Lewis Smead's wonderful book, Forgive and Forget, there is what I will call a fable of reconciliation that I want you to hear. Yes, it's a fable, but it is not really a fable. In the village of Friesland, there lived a tall, thin baker named Falk. He was a righteous man with a long, thin chin and a long, thin nose. Falk was so upright that he seemed to spray righteousness from his thin lips upon anyone who was near him. And so people preferred to keep their distance. Falk's wife was Hilda. Hilda was short and round. Her face was round. Her arms were round. Her bosom was round. Her rump was round. And Hilda did not keep people at bay with righteousness, but her soft roundness invited them instead to come close in order to share the warm cheer of her open heart. Hilda respected her husband, and she loved him too, as much as Falk would allow her, but her heart ached for something more from him than his righteousness. And there on the bed of her need lay the seeds of her sadness. One morning, having worked before dawn making the loaves, Falk returned home early, only to find a stranger lying in bed beside Hilda. Hilda's adultery became the talk of the town. It was a scandal in the church. And everyone assumed that Falk would throw Hilda out of his house, so righteous was he. But Falk surprised everyone when he said he forgave her, just as the good book said he should. But in his heart of hearts, Falk could not forgive Hilda for bringing shame to his name. Whenever he thought about her, his feelings were angry and hard, and he despised her as if she were a common whore. And when it came down to it, he hated her for betraying him after he had been so loyal and so faithful and had practiced such fidelity to her. You see, he only pretended to forgive Hilda so that he could punish her with his righteous mercy. Now, Falk's fakery did not sit well in heaven. And so each time that Falk would feel hatred for Hilda, an angel would drop one small pebble, what's smaller than a button, she would drop it into his heart, and every time a pebble dropped, he would feel that same sting of pain that he felt when he opened the door into the bedroom. And the harder he hated her, the more pain he experienced, and the more pain he experienced, the more he hated. And the pebbles multiplied, and Falk's heart grew so heavy that he began to bend over at the waist, so much so that he had to crane his neck just to look forward. And Falk was miserable. And he prayed to God that he could simply die. Well, the angel who dropped the pebbles into his heart came to him one night and told him how he could heal the hurt. He said there was one remedy and one remedy only for the hurt of a wounded heart. Falk would need to have the miracle of magic eyes. He would need eyes that could see back to the beginning of his hurt and see that Hilda was not a wife who betrayed him, but a weak woman who needed him very much. And only a new way of looking with magic eyes could heal the hurt from flowing from the wounds of yesterday. And Falk protested, "Nothing can change the past," he said. "Hilda is guilty, a fact that not even the angels can deny." And the angel said, "Yes, you are right. You cannot change the past. You can only heal the hurt that comes from the past. And you can only heal it with the miracle of magic eyes." "Now, how can I get your magic eyes?" he pounded. He said, "In desiring it. And in your desiring, asking, and they will be given to you. And each time you see Hilda through new eyes, one pebble will be removed from your aching heart." Falk wanted them to be taken away all at once, and the angel said, "No, that is not possible," because he had grown to love his hatred. Only one pebble at a time would they be removed. And the pain in his heart finally drove Falk to want and to ask for the magic eyes that the angel had promised. And so he asked, and the angel gave. And soon, Hilda began to change before Falk's very eyes. Wonderfully and mysteriously, he began to see her as that lovely woman who needed him instead of that wicked woman who had betrayed him. And the angel kept the promise. He lifted the pebbles from Falk's heart one by one, but it took a long time because there were so many that had to be taken away. But gradually, ever so gradually, Falk felt his heart grow lighter, and he began to walk straight again, and somehow his thin chin and nose did not seem as sharp as before. And he invited Hilda into his heart again. And together they began their second season of humble joy. Have you witnessed the power of reconciliation? It is a wondrous
thing to see. When people who were enemies, when people who were both hurt can come together and to see one another with magic eyes, when they could hear those words of the Apostle Paul, "I appeal you to you on behalf of Christ, be reconciled to God and to each other." It is such a beautiful thing to see. I remember how beautiful it was to watch my father and my uncle, who had not spoken to each other in 25 years, weep and hold each other in their arms. What was unfortunate was it took the death of my sister to bring it about. Reconciliation is a wonderful thing to see. And it's one of the most essential things that the church must practice. Not first of all being reconciled to the world, but being reconciled right here with the person you don't want to talk to across the aisle, with the person who you think is power hungry, with the person you think, "Oh, well, look who says they're a Christian now." It's a beautiful thing to see, and I wish I could say that I've seen it with everybody, but I have also seen the tragedy of those who refused. I have witnessed people who took their pain with them to the grave. A couple of members of my first church asked me to visit their next door neighbors. They knew they were having some difficulty, and maybe you can get to know them and ask them to church. And so I met them, and I got to know Durwood. Durwood, without question, was the most miserable human being I have ever encountered in my life. I had to really push myself to go to see the man, but I felt I had to do it. He had alienated everyone in his life. The people who wanted to befriend him, he in no time pushed away. His wife was the only one who remained by his side. They had one child, a daughter, and they hadn't seen nor spoken to her in 32 years. And then in the midst of hearing that pain, Durwood suffered a stroke, and he could now barely speak. And I said, "Durwood, don't you think the time has come to mend the fences, to build a bridge? Isn't it time that you contacted your daughter?" And Durwood said, "When she comes back here on her knees begging," Durwood refused. It took a long time, but I was finally able to track down his daughter. She was living in another state. And I said, "Your father is dying. I know you haven't spoken in a long, long time. But would you consider..." And before I could get those words out of my mouth, she said, "I will not. When he dies, good riddance." It was the smallest funeral I had ever officiated. Four people came, including me, including the neighbors from our church. It's one of the most painful things I have ever done. So I appeal to you on behalf of Christ. Be reconciled. Be reconciled. Be reconciled. May it be an earworm that doesn't stop repeating itself until we all, in our way, have done just that.